Welcome back to episode 44 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy. And the new mechanic companion is interesting, and I was thinking about whether or not I would play one of these cards, and I thought about my husband as my in real life companion and what my deck building restriction would be, and that would say that I have to have one copy of Mirror Battlesphere in my starting deck.
That's so true. And I'm your co-host Mike Coyle, and I've been sorting my collection of bulk recently. I have a ton of Ravnica, and when I'm doing it, I'm listening to a little bit of music, and I kid you not, this is just popping in my head all day. If you're looking for guild gates, I got news for you, son. I got 99 copies of every single one.
Hey, I play them in some of my commander decks.
Absolutely.
I do like those cards.
They work.
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander. Just a quick note, if you're looking to support the podcast in any sort of particular way, number one, easiest way to do it, drop a comment, drop a like, drop a follow, whatever
drop
you're
them.
Listening to. Yeah, drop them like it's hot. give us your honest opinion. We'll take it. We'll manipulate the podcast as such. And we'd really appreciate the feedback. Another way you can support us is we have a TCG player affiliate link located on our website, guardianprojectpodcast.com. If you follow that link and make your purchases as you're going to for the upcoming Ikoria set, upgrade your commander decks, build brand new commander decks, get those lists in. If you use our affiliate link, it would really help out the podcast.
And before we start, we want to thank all of our patrons. We appreciate your support. We have another patron this past week who signed up. Thank you, Brian. Hope you like what we do. And if you want to support us, you can head over to patreon.com/Guardian Project Pod and support for as little as $1 a month. Coyle, what is on the agenda this week?
This week, we are going to talk about all the announcements that happened this week over Arena and Ikoria and all that jazz. Sorry about that. We are going to do going to talk about some of the Oracle changes in terms of some creature subtypes. We are going to talk about the new mechanics of Ikoria and what kind of goes with them and helps them out from previous sets, and then we're going to finish out with a commander of the week. I am going to talk about my Gitrog monster deck.
Yes, so we have a bunch of updates from the MTG Arena State of the Game April announcement. So there's the Godzilla Monster Series, player draft on Arena. Everybody gets a free draft. Whether or not you choose best of one or best of three is up to you. I like best of one because best of three takes a long time. That's just my preference.
That's true.
FNM at Home had some updates. There's some updates to what's in development and then what is in concept. So right now until May 21st, players who enter an Ikoria Lair of Behemoths limited event will also receive a Godzilla Monster Series card style in addition to their normal event rewards. It says this includes both Ikoria draft and sealed events. You'll receive one for each time you enter or until you've gotten all 18 alternate card styles. It says in addition to the new card set, set mastery and some other truly monstrous card styles, there's one last thing they wanted to highlight for their developer roadmap. It said you'll be able to draft Ikoria Lair of Behemoths with players. It's an important milestone, and this should be happening on Thursday. So tomorrow we should be able to draft with humans.
This huge. And,
yes, and right now, happening literally right now is the streamer the early access event.
Yep.
And I've watched I think 7 human drafts today. Mm-hmm. While working, just having it on, it's so nice. You can see who's holding up the draft, you can see who's playing against. It has a lot of really cool features, but and the set looks really fun too. So
I just like how you say it's so nice, and the first thing you mention is someone holding up the draft.
There was a screenshot yesterday. It was from the developers. There was one person who goes, "Look at me, I'm taking screenshots instead of drafting. There's 6 packs waiting for me to move on."
Oh my gosh.
And then, like I said, starting tomorrow, we are getting player draft. So there's two new player draft modes available in-game. It says the modes play similarly to what we've played on Arena before and closely replicate the experience that a player might have when drafting with other people in a game shop, which is so much nicer than playing with bots, like when you play against a bot in Throne of Eldraine and they just grabbed 18 of that stupid merfolk that also mills four. What is that merfolk called again? I forget. The
Secret Keeper?
Is it Secret Keeper?
Merfolk Secret Keeper, the 0-4?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, and you mill four and then it's a 0-4. That was like every time you played against the bot draft, it was like, cool, I'm gonna play against Merfolk Secret Keeper again.
Yep.
So it says when joining a draft, you will be placed at a table until seven other people join. Once everybody's queued up, you confirm that you're ready, and then you can start drafting. So that's exciting. Your first draft is free, so you just get to pick one.
Which is great.
And then, yeah, wonderful. And then there are some FNM at home event updates. There will be, I'm trying to find them right now. Of course, I can't find it in the announcement. At home. Okay, so player challenges is the working name that they're calling their, this is in concept. Why am I not finding this now? At home.
At home. Friday Night Magic.
FNM. At home. Right here. Here it is. Ensuring the health and well-being of our employees, fans, and partners remain our top priority, and we will be continuing to support our local communities and stores from a safe distance of online play. So in addition to other incentives they've been working on, they are continuing the FNM at home, which I have been participating in for the last few weeks. You could get like card sleeves. Mm-hmm. And so they added a few more through May 15th. So right up to the release, obviously. And there's an Ikoria Layer of Behemoths layer event, which is just play in any event to receive a reward from your LGS when you tell them you played. April 24th is Singleton. May 1st is Artisan. May 8th is Pauper. And then May 15th is Historic Brawl.
Very nice.
So that's exciting. In development. So they are coming out with a 64-bit client. They said that they've been waiting to prioritize this. They're going to continue to support a 32-bit client. But after they get to the 64-bit client, they are going to release this on Mac OS. So for those of you who have been waiting to play this because you don't play on a PC, it sounds like you're going to be able to do this at the end of the summer.
It's coming. Yep.
It's coming. And then Cube Drafts. We got to do Cube Sealed. They're looking to release Cube Draft. It says you may have already gotten a taste of this if you tried out our Cube Sealed earlier this month, but you'll be able to draft using all cards available on Arena. And it says, as with Cube Sealed, Cube Draft will be a phantom event. Only this time, instead of opening six packs worth of cards, you'll draft them against fellow players. Cube also has no concept of rarity, so packs will contain plenty of exciting rares and mythics in your pool. The diversity of cards and strategies and synergies make each run a new and exciting experience every time. And says, as we continue to add cards to Arena, you can expect us to update and iterating on the cubes that they offer. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. I did my first sealed cube yesterday. It was awesome.
You said you went, 4-1 or 5-1?
I went 5-1. I felt awful about my deck. I'm like, I think I'm doing the wrong colors. And then it worked like really well. So
What'd you play?
I played Teemer Good Stuff. I didn't have like Omnath, but I had like Arisen Reef. I had a bunch of mana rocks and then all the planeswalkers that I could play at the top end. It worked really well.
It did the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Historic roadmap, it says they're going to continue to support Historic, and they have Historic Anthology coming out in May. And then I think the one thing that you were excited about, which is the Almond Cat remaster.
Almond Cat is the best plane.
Almond Cat, it says that you should expect this to arrive sometime this summer. So Almond Cat was already in Arena. I remember playing it when I first started playing Arena. And I also understand that part of the Shadows over Innistrad block was also in Arena. So I'm wondering if we're going to get that block soon as well. But they're going to be adding AmonKhet back. So, and then InConcept is mobile. And then Player Challenges is the working name they're calling their competitive experience that will have a short duration but high skill cap. And they are going to give out, I guess, a lot more prizes that aren't just like gold and gems.
Okay.
So it says the goal is to have player entries support the prize pool. It is separate from Magic Esports. It says, while competitive, these will differ from Mythic Point qualifiers and will not require pre-qualifications to compete in. And then the prizes will be different from their format, but will still follow like a X wins or Y losses format.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm excited. And then tomorrow, Ikoria releases on Arena.
Yeah. So we get to play it well before we... Yeah, before it actually gets printed, at least here in America. I actually did see there was a box opening that someone did over in Japan.
Oh?
So I mean, Japan's getting the cards right on time as they planned. Obviously, right. Ours are delayed. But yeah, he opened up a collector's booster box, and it was pretty dope. Not going to lie.
I'm excited. We both, Coyle was just telling me, so we both pre-ordered a case of this set. So I'm really excited to open up a bunch of cards.
I don't know if I'm gonna open mine or keep it sealed. I also ordered two sets of the commander deck.
You're gonna keep the whole case sealed?
Maybe.
Wow.
We'll see.
I like to do, fortunately for me, I have a significant other at home that I can play cards with, so we can do like sealed events and stuff at home.
We can do some pre-release sealed. I'll open one booster box, or we'll buy the pre-release kits from our LGSs.
I mean, they're still going to do pre-release just after that, aren't they?
I hope so, but only if the timing is correct.
Yeah, I guess you're right. We also have Oracle changes coming with Ikoria. So we got sharks in Ikoria, so they're going to make all the old sharks that were fish into sharks. Does this mean we're going to see this happen to bring about a new tribal strategy in Commander? No.
No.
But I'm happy to see that Battering Krasis, giant shark, half, and then it's one of the cards from the unset because it becomes like half, like robot butt.
Mm-hmm.
Hammerhead Shark, Shamble Shark, and Shark to Crab are all becoming sharks instead of their previous type of fish. I mean, some of them were Fish Beast or Fish Octopus Crab.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed also Voracious Great Shark, which was just a fish. Now it's also a shark.
Yeah.
So these are functional reprints. It will change how those cards, I guess, are actually played.
Will it change how they're played?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you have two people with Shark to Crab and someone plays a coat of arms, Shark to Crabs are pumping each other now for being sharks. And if someone also had out a regular fish, it wouldn't pump them all anymore. So this actually does change the way that things function.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's three functional changes and then three non-functional changes. So the second one is a change to the chicken card type for an unsanctioned card, Chicken a la King. It says, while chickens are funny, it's more fun in gameplay if chickens have the creature type bird. So they were chickens. So cards like Chicken a la King are going to be chickens. And it says, he also lets you tap birds and put counters on birds and even became a noble with the release of Ikoria. So if you're playing Chicken a la King in any format, it is now a bird.
That's good to know.
And Dryad of the Elysian Grove is now no longer just a nymph. It's a nymph dryad.
Yeah. I want to back up just for a second to this Chicken a la King because okay. You missed the absolutely amazing pun when he became a royal, his royal excellency right there. And I just want to make sure that gets said.
It's so bad. I skipped it because I was like, do I need to say this?
It's the best thing.
not great. Okay. And so then there's some, the last functional reprint is the card Stand or Fall. I had never seen this card before. So it says, the card reads, at the beginning of your combat phase, separate all creatures defending player controls into two face-up piles. Only creatures in the pile of that player's choice can block this turn. So they're changing it. It says the most correct interpretation of the previous Oracle text, ambiguity and debate aside, is that you choose some creatures for one opponent and no one else's creatures could block. That's how people were arguing in a multiplayer format. So the new errata brings on the text that now reads, at the beginning of combat on your turn, for each defending player, separate all creatures they control into two piles. Only one pile can block, instead of saying one player has two piles and the rest just can't block.
Right.
So I get it. So functionally, this card is going to work differently. And then there's three non-functional changes. One is with cards like Garruk's Horde or Oracle of Moldiah that allow you to cast things from the top of your library or play them from the top of your library. Specifically with cards like the adventure creatures from Throne of Eldraine. So Garruk's Horde says that you can cast the top card of your library if it's a creature. They're just clarifying you can play the creature side. You can't cast like an adventure side because it's not a creature. They changed the text on cards like Raid because of the new Night Squad Commando in Ikoria that basically has like a raid function. Mm-hmm. So cards that have raid, the reminder text for the mechanic melee and the card Charter Course now read differently. Instead of saying if you attacked with a creature this turn, it says if you attacked this turn. They were able to shorten that. And then they also were able to change four cards, Heartstone, Training Grounds, Power Artifact, and Biomancer's Familiar. It says that it's just a new template for reducing costs where you can't hit zero to activate an ability. And so it says it just reduced redundant words. So it used to say activated abilities of creatures cost one less to activate, and then this effect can't reduce the amount of mana an ability costs to activate to less than one. Now it just says this effect can't reduce the mana in that cost to less than one. So they just cut out a few of the redundant words. Does the exact same thing.
Yep.
That, and then changing, I guess there is one final one for clones, for Mercurial Pretender, Mirror Image, and Astrid's Invocation. Instead of saying the word any, this creature enters the battlefield as a copy of any creature or the enchantment, it now says A. So they cut out two whole letters. Any to A.
Wow. What so a now, change.
The more you know. Motions the rainbow. So the long story short is the most important thing there is that we got some sharks.
Yeah, it seems to be the most important one out of all of them. we got sharks. Even though sharks are technically fish, they're a little bit more special than fish.
Yeah. Are they technically just fish?
They are. Sharks are classified as fish.
In the real world?
Mm-hmm. Real RL.
Right IRL.
Now. We're talking IRL right now.
IRL shark, just fish.
Sharks are fish.
I guess that's true. I guess. It is true.
It's true. That's true.
But now we got sharks and fish. Did any of them say shark fish?
No, because shark wasn't a
that's true.
A creature type.
No.
And none of them.
Now
and none of them.
Shark fish.
No, none of them were changed to shark fish.
Shark and fish.
Yeah, no, they're
shark,
not.
shark fish. Hoo-ha. I bet you the one. Yes. I wonder if there is the half shark, half whatever. I wonder if there's just a fish. Then you can make yourself a shark fish.
Half shark, half fish.
I'd have to look at the unmutate cards.
Oh man.
Want to move on to our main segment?
I think we should probably move on.
Let's talk about mechanics that synergize with Ikoria mechanics.
Okay.
So Ikoria has cycle, mutate, and companion. So we were going to talk about previous mechanics that work really well or work at all with Ikoria's mechanics for synergy.
Synergy.
So let's start with cycle.
Okay.
So there's a few. I had some on my list that didn't actually work because of the way that a permanent is defined. So Gravestorm, once again, I'm looking at the one card Bitter Ordeal for Gravestorm. Still doesn't work because the permanent has to be on the battlefield.
Okay.
So you can't just cycle away a permanent. So the first mechanic that I found that works well with cycle is Unearth. There are creatures with cycling. So if you cycle them away to draw a card, you can later unearth them. Commanders like Cedrus the Traitor King that says each creature new card has Unearth for two and a black. You can cycle away a card and then you can unearth it in the future. If it's a creature.
Right. No, that makes sense.
And
Cedrus is playing at least two of the right colors. I mean, blue, I mean, cause so if we're just talking about the commander precon, it's Jeskai, right? And Cedrus is Grixis, right? So you have to do a few changes from that Jeskai precon, take out some of those white cards, but you still have a ton to go off.
But in Ikoria, I mean, at least in Ikoria, there is at least one black cycling creature as well. Yeah. So from the main set, not even just the commander set, there is support there. Another mechanic that works really well is flashback. Now, granted, flashbacks on some cards, there's other cards that grant things flashback.
Yeah.
So flashback really only affects instants and sorceries, but there are cycling instants and sorceries in Ikoria. So there's a few cards. Most notable are cards like Snapcaster Mage or Past in Flames that give either all or an individual card in your graveyard flashback. But cards like Recoup, Drelnu Lichlord, and Backdraft Hellkite, which that one I was not familiar with. So Backdraft Hellkite's a 4/4 flying creature from Commander 19, so this most recent commander set, that says whenever it attacks, each instant and sorcery in your graveyard gains flashback. So that was cool.
Nice.
And then Drelnu Lichlord has tap, target instant or sorcery in your graveyard has flashback until end of turn. And that actually is a commander. It is a legendary zombie lord.
Oh.
Yeah. So flashback works really well with cycling.
Yeah, I guess
not all sight. I'm sorry. Cycling works
okay well
with some flashback cards.
Sure.
With some. Arguably, most cards work with Delve.
Oh yeah.
You can fuel that graveyard by cycling away those cards to then delve them away. So Delve lets you exile cards from your graveyard to reduce the CMC of reduce the casting cost by one mana for one generic mana for each card you exile. So throw those away, draw another card, and then delve it away for the card you drew.
Yeah, and you get your dig through time for two mana. Easy peasy.
Get your Treasure Cruise for one mana.
Boom.
Love it.
So there is a commander before the set had come out that actually does have a build that revolves around cycling. It is Xur the Enchanter. And the idea is he searches up the enchantment Astral Slide and Astral Drift, which both allow you every time you cycle a card to blink a permanent. It comes back at the end step. So it's technically not a blink. It's a blink and come back. So I guess.
Flicker.
A flicker. A flicker effect. Enter the Battlefield effects would have actually a pretty big synergy with cycling because of those enchantments, as long as you have ways to find them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next two are very similar mechanics, Threshold and Delirium. Both care about cards in your graveyard, but both care, one cares about the number and one cares about the type. So Threshold is an old mechanic that cares about whether or not you have seven or more cards in your graveyard. So you can cycle cards away, fill up your graveyard to hopefully hit seven, and then cards that have Threshold generally have a better ability. One card that comes to mind is Cephalid Colosseum. It taps for a blue mana. It's a land and deals one damage to you. Or if you have seven or more cards in your graveyard, you can tap it, you can pay a blue and tap and sacrifice it to draw three cards and then discard three cards. There's a lot of Threshold cards. One that's played a lot in Commander is Far Wanderings.
Yeah.
You can search your library for a basic land, put it on the battlefield tapped, and then Threshold. If there's seven or more, you can search for three basic lands and put them onto the battlefield tapped.
Mm-hmm.
I play Far Wanderings a lot. I wonder if I overvalue this card. Threshold's really easy to hit in Commander.
It's super easy. I mean, especially in, like, so if you're playing Far Wanderings, you're obviously filling your graveyard up, and you might be playing a Lands Matter deck anyways. Yeah. So getting triple Enter the Battlefield effects for your lands could be just massive. So that's where you're going to see that card played most.
Yeah, so Threshold, really good. And then Delirium also cares about cards in your graveyard, but it cares about card types. So Delirium says if you have four or more card types, you get a bonus to whatever spell it is that you're casting. So the card types are artifact, creature, enchantment, instant land, planeswalker, sorcery, and tribal. Obviously, not all of these have cycling, but we see creatures, instants, and sorceries most commonly that have cycling.
Right.
So those work well with Delirium. Arguably, I'm going to say it works for Undergrowth. Okay. It does, but, you know, Undergrowth, I think, is a very uncommon mechanic to see unless you see somebody playing like Azoni Thousand-Eyed.
Right. That's about it.
But, you know, I still think it's a hidden gem, Mausoleum Secrets, the tutor that has Undergrowth. Search your library for a black card with CMC less than or equal to the number of creature cards in your graveyard. So if you're cycling away creatures, Mausoleum Secrets, great. Izoni still wants creatures as well.
Yep.
But there's only, you know, the reason that I'm arguing this one is because there's only one black cycling card in Ikoria.
I gotcha.
So the most I was seeing, I believe, was white. And yeah, so I'm looking here. There's a couple red and there's a couple white, some blue, but there's only one black. And there's only one green, so the colors for Undergrowth are black and green. So the least in the actual set work with Undergrowth.
you're not wrong.
Right. And, but if you're playing a three-color deck, I guess you could still care.
Yeah. I mean, and some of those cycling effects, like, they have alternate effects, right? I know the black one is the Void Beckoner.
Yeah, Void Beckoner. So when you cycle it, you put a Death Touch counter on a creature you control.
Yeah.
And then the green one is when you cycle this, you put a trample counter on target creature you control.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that Void Beckoner, I think, would be like almost an auto include into maybe like a Sir Conrad deck. I know we're getting a little bit away from the main topic, though, but, you know,
sure,
to be able to throw a creature in your graveyard as a combat trick to give one of your creatures Death Touch on the swing and it does a damage because Sir Conrad, seems great.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously this list is not exhaustive. These are the ones that we thought that these cards worked with. So you know,
beside the two obvious themes of discarding cards and drawing cards, which is exactly what cycling is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So do you have any other mechanics that you would want to play with cycling cards?
Well, I said just the draw triggers and discard triggers.
I mean, any cards that synergize with that in general. It doesn't even have to be a mechanic, I guess. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The card that was printed in the Madness commander deck that is like Waste Knot, but it's for only
Bone Miser?
Yeah, Bone Miser. Bone Miser is probably the one I would look at. It's in black, so again, it's not well supported by the current set when it comes to cycling. But then in red and green, you have so much. There's so many red pingers. Is whenever you discard a card, it deals one damage to everyone. And then advantages in red and blue, like a Niv-Mizzet. Whenever you draw a card, you get to deal a damage. So you can double up on a lot of these effects in red-blue. I think red-blue is what gets the strongest when it comes to cycling,
sure,
which makes sense. I mean, Jeskai is what they're looking for from the C20 pre-con. So
right.
It works.
You want to talk about Mutate? This one was really difficult to, because Mutate works with like everything, so creature wise.
Everything but humans is what Mutate works with.
Yes.
So when I was looking at Mutate, I had, I guess, three main subjects I was looking at and how to make Mutate work for you in Commander. beside the just building around mutate effects, which I think is a little bit too glass cannon, in that if you're not mutating onto something that's hexproof and indestructible, then someone could just have you remove it and then you lose your big creature. It's a Voltron strategy. But mm-hmm. Voltron is the first thing I listed here. If you are playing a commander that has indestructible right off the bat, that's an easy mutate target, and you can keep getting the mutate triggers off of it, or just pumping it up or turning it into a bigger thing to swing out and win. I mean, you're just adding keywords, adding, you know, double strike with the snap decks, Apex of the Hunt, adding trample and flying with some of the other apexes. It could be a way. Auras and equipment are probably less expensive, but this could be a way to dodge artifact removal, dodge enchantment removal with mutate.
Yeah, I saw someone put a 7/7 on a 0/5 turtle earlier, and I was like, wow, just mind blown.
That's a big boy now. The second mechanic I had was using mutate at flash speed. So there are a lot of mutate cards that actually do, or I say a lot, there's a few mutate cards that actually do have flash. Mm-hmm. I know C, Dasher, Octopus is mutate with flash. Whenever it deals damage, you get to draw a card. We have Dirge Bat, which is whenever it mutates, destroy target creature. Planeswalker and opponent controls. So some of these already have flash, but if you can have a way of giving all of your mutates flash with a Vidalcan Ori or a Leyline of Anticipation, you can turn mutates into combat tricks like those flash ones actually are meant as. Combat trick in, again, your snap decks to give your creature double strike.
I did think you just said combat chicken.
Combat chicken in.
Combat chickens.
Combat chicken trick. Combat trick chicken?
Combat chicken trick.
Combat chicken trick in your mutates. And you know, beside the fact that they're just good value, which leads me to my third point, which is tribal decks. Any non-human tribals can probably use this mutate function like really, really well, because it's nothing but upside. Especially since when you mutate onto a creature, you can just put it on the bottom and it keeps its creature type.
Right.
So the big thing that kept coming to my head was slivers, because you can now pump your slivers up, you know, with a bunch of these mutates, or, you know, throw in a Nethroi Apex of Death to bring back all your 1/1 slivers that are all pumping each other up and giving each other a bunch of stuff anyways. The only one I think maybe wouldn't be so good would be Brokos Apex of Forever. So you mutate him from your graveyard and give something trample. Unless you're playing like Nightmare Beast or Elemental Tribal to actually have him come out as the top creature, I think maybe he's the one that falls off in that category.
Otherwise, all you're doing is really adding trample to whatever.
Exactly. And it's
tribal you're playing.
And yeah. You know, it's 5 mana to give something trample. There's much cheaper ways to do that.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. It's one of those mechanics where in a couple of weeks, once this is out and we start playing with it, we'll likely see that there's more synergies or things that we want. It's hard to evaluate this mechanic, in my opinion, because it's similar to Bestow, but so different.
Yeah. No, you're right.
so different. And Bestow, I don't know if I play a Bestow card in any deck.
I play one Bestow card in Muldrotha, and that's the 5-color one that gives flying, trample, vigilance, lifelink, and first strike.
You play that in Morrifon, right?
Yep, Chromanticore.
Okay. You said Muldrotha, and I was like, wait.
I don't own a Muldrotha deck.
I was like, when did you build that? Because I
missed
that.
In my dreams every single night.
Oh, okay. I mean, it's a very you deck.
It is, and that's why I didn't build it.
You want to talk about our 10 companions?
Yeah. So, do you want to talk about all 10, or do you want to leave at least two of them on the wayside. Well, let's leave out
Lutri. It was officially banned this week. We already knew, we mentioned it before, yeah. But the official announcement came out this week, and they're like, "Hey, remember when we said they were banned? It's banned." So it's Lutri, banned. Lutri's out. So we're down to nine.
Yes, I guess the second one we can talk about is Yorion Sky Nomad. This requires you to have your deck to have at least 20 cards more than the minimum deck size. Unfortunately, you cannot do that in Commander. You must have a 100 card deck. So that
You can play it in the 100.
You can play it in the 99. You can play it as a Commander. I mean, it's a Blinky Boy.
Yep.
And it's in the right colors. It's in blue, white. It's a flying 4/5. It's got a nice body. You know.
Yep. Yeah, play that in Brago, play it as a Commander. Okay, so we're down to eight. We're flying through this.
I mean, yeah, let's keep going with these companions. We've got Luris of the Dream Den, which is your black white 3/2 companion that allows you to cast one permanent spell with CMC 2 or less from your graveyard. But restriction is that your deck. All of the permanents in your deck must be CMC 2 or less. This rule does include your commander, meaning there's actually only two legal commanders you can run with this.
Is Eile Eternal Pilgrim?
Eile Eternal Pilgrim is probably the better of the two. The other one is Obsidot, the two mana one. No, Karlov. Sorry, Karlov of the Ghost Council.
Yep. Yeah.
So those are the only two you can act legally run with this card as your companion. Eile probably is the better one because you're actually sacrificing things to bring them back. Luckily, the CMC cost is only for your permanents, so maybe there's a black-white Spellslingers deck you can run here or something. But you are very restricted in who you can have as a commander. In the 99, yep. The card seems not bad. I mean, three mana to get something back that's two CMC or less from your graveyard every turn. You do have to cast it, but yeah, I mean, as long as you can keep it out and keep getting that value every turn.
I think this card's going to see a lot more play likely in Modern and in Legacy, but I don't know how much it's going to see play as the commander, but yeah, I would play this in Eile over Karlov. But yeah, we are very limited to two whole decks.
I was just thinking, it says on each of your turns. So if you are thinking you're going to flash out a Snapcaster Mage or something on your opponent's turn, just know that is not how the card reads. I just learned that just now by reading the card. Explains the card.
Yes, in a non-commander format, you can only Snapcaster Mage a card. Does Snapcaster only cost two?
He only costs two, yeah.
Yeah.
But you'll only be able to do it on your turn. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, can't sneak in with that. Okay, so we got through. Okay, so that was Luris of the Dream Den.
All right, time for the talk about the real ones, the real companions that we can legally play with a bunch of, with more than just two commanders.
Okay.
I would like to start with Zerda the Dawnwalker.
All right.
So...
It's our Boros Elemental Fox.
Yes, so I was actually... pretty excited about this one. I know some people in our Discord were excited about this too. Zerda says that your abilities you activate that aren't mana abilities cost two less to activate. This effect can't reduce the mana in that cost to less than one. And you can pay one generic and tap it. Target creature can't block this turn. Eh, that's whatever. It is one hybrid Boros. And to get a 3/3, so, you know, 3 mana for a 3/3, it's not bad. Elemental Fox, in case that's relevant. The restriction, deck building restriction, is each permanent card in your starting deck has to have an activated ability. It seems a little counterintuitive when you look at a card like Training Grounds, which doesn't have an activated ability, which does the exact same effect that Zerda has. And actually, the colors itself are a little bit weird, being in Boros for these activated abilities. But one thing to look for is, you know, you don't necessarily have to build a deck around reducing the activated abilities of everything. Running a... a 3-color Super Friends deck in Jeskai using Kaikar, since Kaikar has an activated ability of sacrificing a creature for red mana, could be worth it just to, you know, if you're going to play your Super Friends deck, everything, you know, most of your deck is probably going to be instant sorceries and planeswalkers in a Kaikar deck, so you can produce a lot of spirits and then, you know, run a Chain Veil in there or something to reduce the cost of its activation down to 2. Find easier ways to actually go infinite and use it as a combo piece. Another way would be just to run it as a Kenrith, the Return King activations deck. You know, Kenrith is amazing with all of his activations. Reducing everything by 2 on that is absolutely ridiculous. Any permanents that produce mana count as a permanent with an activated ability, so you can run all of your mana rocks. Again, I would probably lean on a Super Friends heavy deck more than I would an activations deck. Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, when I look at Zerda, I like thinking about combo pieces, and maybe that's the more competitive player in me when I think about this card, because I just want to play cards like Basalt Monolith and then pump it into something silly that has an activated ability.
Absolutely.
But when I look at this, thinking about, you know, your creature having to have your commander having to have an activated ability as well, you can definitely build 3 colors, but there's decks that I don't see very often that I would definitely want to play, like Razia, Boros Archangel, or Bassandra Battle Seraph, because they have activated abilities. Are they good? Not really. But I do like the idea of playing these in like a Super Friends deck with just a bunch of rocks.
Yeah.
And this is really strong in Kenrith.
Super strong Kenrith. The other one that really sees a benefit from it, I think maybe would be Golos, because it's 2 in Wooburg to activate his ability. So with the companion out, it's only Wooburg to activate, maybe.
Wooburg.
And then if you're going to play like 5-color Sisay or something, you could do that too. I don't know how many like legendary creatures you can pump out with activated abilities.
I'm sure there's plenty.
There's probably a lot.
There's plenty. Yeah. Ones that we probably don't see very often too. And with the deck restriction requirement like that, it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Most definitely.
I do like this one. Of the companions, this is one that I do like a lot.
It does also fit in a Brea Aetherium Shaper. But you would have to run a lot of activated abilities, a lot of artifacts. I mean, you're going to run a lot of artifacts anyways, but you can't run artifacts without activated abilities now. So it'll hinder it a little bit, but maybe it'll be worth it to you.
You said this fits in Brea?
Yeah, Brea, Aetherium Shaper.
She is... Oh, you're right. She's 4 colors.
She's sans green.
No, she's 4 colors. Yeah, everything but green. Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah.
So... Yeah, I don't have any brews or anything going, but I'm sure someone can plug this into their Super Friends deck, no problem.
Yeah. I have not been thinking about building a commander around the companion mechanic, because I'm so used to building my deck around the actual commander. And I feel like this is like trying to build around... You have to build around the companion and then find the commander that fits, and then find the cards that fits both themes.
Sure.
I just haven't thought about it. It's so new that I think the only one that I've really thought much about is the 5-color companion that works with my Niv-Mizzet deck.
Yes. Gigantha, the Wellspring, or Gigantha?
I think it's Gigantha.
I want to say Gigantha. It sounds so much cooler. Gigantha.
So Gigantha is a 5/5 for 4 and a hybrid green-red. And it says no card in your starting deck has more than one of the same mana symbol in its mana cost, and has an ability to tap for white, blue, black, red, green, and this mana can be spent only to pay the colored pips. So you cannot spend it on any generic mana costs. So 5-color decks rejoice. I mean, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a significant loss in that deck restriction for cards for like my Niv-Mizzet deck. So you're generally playing 2 colored cards, but those 2 colored cards sometimes have multiple white or multiple blue or multiple red pips, and you would not be able to have them in the deck. And the way that I think I built my Niv-Miz, there definitely is a build that would care about this.
Sure.
But I don't think my build wants this, which is the sad part. My board wipes in Azorius have multiple pips.
Right. Well, yeah, you can just take all your board wipes out. I'm sure it'll be fine.
100% fine. Literally no problems. The game will be great. The game will be great for everyone. What do you think about this commander?
So,
or companion?
So that obviously, you know, it goes without saying that all of the companions offer limitations in your deck building. So I wanted to focus on things that would not be hurt by the limitations as much. And something I mentioned earlier in this episode, slivers seem to be a real good thing for this guy in your sideboard. Most slivers do not repeat a pip in their casting cost. So, I mean, this guy is just going to be a free mana rock on five, help you pump out or mana fix even to get out your sliver Hive Lord, you're the first sliver, any of those. You won't be able to run some of the good enchantments like Necropotence, but you can still run your Rhystic Study. You can still run your Mystic Remora to get your card draw going. And the other tribe being dragons does actually get hit by this a little bit. Not a ton, but, you know, you can't play Savage Ventmaw, which is part of a quote unquote infinite combo with an enchantment that also you can't play.
So I take those out.
So you can't play those. So you have to play a fair dragons deck, but it can help you pump some stuff out. You can't have Progenitus, unfortunately, because it's double of every pip. But you can pretty much play, you can play a ton of the dragons. It's not going to be maybe optimized. It's not going to have your infinite combo. You're not going to be able to play Skittles. You're not going to play Slitherix, which is okay because, you know, people feel bad when they get killed by Infect. But
it doesn't happen enough. No one should be mad about that. Who do we have next?
Up next, I would like to move to the easiest build around, which is Kahira the Orphan Guard. Hey,
all right.
Are you playing a tribal cats deck? Here you go. Here's Kahira. Put it in your sideboard. Are you playing a tribal elementals deck? That includes white? You'd have to go five color for that. Most of the elementals, you know, they hover around Temur, but if you go with a Horde of Notions, which is a five color elemental, if you're playing this, you're probably playing elemental tribal. Shove a Kahira into your sideboard. Mm-hmm. And the easiest one, obviously, is dinosaurs. I mean, if you look at a Gishath deck, it's nothing but dinosaurs. So you could add Kahira in there, pump your dinosaurs. So I guess I kind of skipped over the explaining of the card. But the restriction for Kahira the Orphan Guard is each creature card in your starting deck has to be a cat, elemental, nightmare, dinosaur, or beast card. And when Kahira is on the battlefield, those creature types get +1/+1 and vigilance. And it's a 3/2 vigilance on a body for one and two hybrid green-white mana.
Yes, I like this card. I would definitely put this in a Gishath deck.
Yeah, it fits perfectly.
I got to start making tribal and token decks. And I've thought about Gishath so many times, but it's like, hey, Andy made another tribal deck.
I mean, there's only so many mechanics, right? Once you've built them all, you have to build more than one.
Yeah, I know. Who do we have next?
Next on the list, I have Obosh the Prey Piercer.
This is the grossest one of them all.
This one's
the artwork. It's creepy. This is scare me.
It's a hellion. It's a hellion, not a centipede. Come on.
It's a hellion horror as well.
So Obosh the Prey Piercer is our black red commander that cares about odd CMC. So your starting deck contains only cards with odd converted mana costs and land cards. And the effect that he has, it's three mana and then hybrid Rakdos. If a source you control with an odd converted mana cost deals damage to a permanent or player, it deals double that damage to that permanent or player instead.
If only you could play this in the other odd Sphinx deck, the Esper Sphinx. Why can I not think of the name now? We just talked about it a few weeks ago on the underplayed Commanders. Yeah,
they totally did it on purpose. They had to have.
Inet, Cryptic Sovereign.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So I like these. These are the more silly. I think these are the more silly things.
Mm-hmm.
Having odd versus even, or like rolling dice are how I feel, or flipping coins are the more silly mechanics. But I think this card's good. And I think that if you do build an odd CMC deck, you could definitely do like Mardu. You don't even have to be stuck with just Rakdos. This card's really good.
For sure. I was actually watching Commander's Quarter episode today, and he had mentioned that both Vile Smasher and Nekusar fit very well into this. There's a huge, huge drawback is you don't get your two CMC mana rocks, and that's really, really big. On top of that, Nekusar actually also plays a bunch of two CMC enchantments that hurt your opponents when they draw cards. Maybe you don't need those if you're doing double damage. This does come down on five, but I actually looked at my Anya Falconwrath list, my wheelie good deck, and there's not actually much that I would have to take out in order to run Obosh. So it could just be a finisher. Turn five, put down Obosh, turn six, wheel a couple times. Most wheels are odd CMC, so...
Would you rather play this as your commander or your companion?
I wouldn't want this as my commander. I think as a commander, it is a win more card, and as a companion, it's a combo piece. So I'd rather have it as a companion.
Yep, I think so as well.
Good. We think alike. We got the right ideas.
In some situations, you still don't think that blue white's the best color pairing, but
no, mono black is the best color pairing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, that's
black,
right. That's right.
Black and black.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect. I like that.
So,
but not as much as blue white.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I can't tell you no with black. I can only say yes, 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 yes. So the next guy I have on the list is Kairuga. Kairuga, the macro sage.
He's a big hippo.
This is your dinosaur hippo in Simic. It says your starting deck contains only cards with converted mana cost 3 or greater and land cards. So this does not have the restriction of permanence like our Orzhov companion did. And he says when he enters the battlefield, draw a card for each other permanent you control with converted mana cost 3 or greater. So not being able to play spells until they're, you know, until you get to 3.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little rough. I mean, you can't play your Soul Ring, you can't play your 2 mana rocks. I mean, you're just gonna naturally draw into your Cultivate, and that might be about it. So it's tough.
Again, I mean, you could turn one Force of Will someone.
You could. Force of Will works.
Force Negation also works.
A majority of the split cards out there should work with this as well. I can't think of a split card that would have CMC lower than 3 off the top of my head. So maybe those are some good ways to actually like cast spells on turn 1 and 2 because the CMC of the card itself is higher than that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a Commander's Quarter episode that Andy pointed me to today suggested that playing a Morphs deck would actually get around this as well. So you can morph things out on, you know, turn 3 and people will know, okay, their CMC is higher than, or 3 or higher on the other side of that morph, but I have no idea what it is. And you can play a commander like Animar to get your morphs out for free because Animar is 3 CMC. So, you know, draw a bunch of cards with Kairuga coming out. This one, I don't know. What are your feelings on Kairuga?
I like this one because it lets me draw.
So okay.
Drawing cards is great. But I have a tendency to want to set up on turns 1, 2, and 3 to play cards to play big things starting on turn 4 and 5 and starting to like get the ball rolling on turn 4. And I feel like in this deck, my ball's not going to start rolling until like turn 7.
It's like Battle Cruiser Tribal.
You can play like the key runes as your ramp.
Commander Sphere.
And by key runes, I mean Simic key rune because it's I guess depending on who your commander is.
And right? And the lockets.
You can play the lockets.
It's probably going to be pretty important to play some cost reducers in this deck somehow, or mana doublers or something for yourself, because your stuff's going to cost a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you could try to level it out around from like 3 to 6, maybe. I mean, and stick to a mid-range CMC there and not have a ton. But I think it's just a little too, it might be a little too slow to be like in a like a mid power deck. I think you're probably looking at a lower tier based on this restriction.
I wonder if I could, you know what? I could play this in as a companion for my Morophon deck and only have to change out a couple blink spells. I totally could.
Yeah, 100% you could.
And card draw is one thing that deck really is begging for. All right, say if you have the same Morophon deck as me out there, you don't. But if you do, Karuga.
You'll just have to take out if you have any sort of low CMC ramp, I guess, and maybe some blink spells. Do you run like Soul Ring and stuff like that?
Yeah, I could take those out. That's fine. I'm usually trying
Soul
to
Ring doesn't belong in every deck.
I mean, I got Tron. Who needs Soul Ring?
You do have Tron.
Oh, I can't do Expedition Map. Okay, I got to rethink this. Maybe not.
Who is next?
So it's actually, I think, the last one on the list.
I think it is, yeah. Nope, there's two more.
No, there's two more. You're right. So we have Gyruda, Doom of Depths. So Gyruda is our Dimir companion, black and blue. That says your starting deck contains only cards with even converted mana cost. Probably should have talked to this about this one after the odd converted mana cost. My bad.
but we didn't.
We did. So for 4, and then a hybrid Dimir, you get a 6/6 Demon Kraken. It says when Gyruda enters the battlefield, each player puts the top 4 cards of their library into their graveyard. Put a creature card with an even converted mana cost from among those cards onto the battlefield under your control.
Each player mills 4. And then you put a creature with an even CMC from among them onto the battlefield. I mean, that's pretty good. You could mill something really big.
Oh, yeah. With even converted mana cost. I mean, Vilas, Broker of Blood, is one of my favorite creatures currently in Magic. It's 8 CMC. Bring it back foe free.
And this is each player. So you could potentially mill 16 cards and you just pick the best creature from those 16.
Yeah. If you're playing old Lazav, that can turn into creatures when they get milled into your opponent's graveyards. You know, that could be a cool way to run this guy.
You could even play new Lazav and just make sure that you have even CMC cards.
Absolutely. Obviously, the high synergy cards with this one are going to be graveyard decks.
Yep.
But there is some restriction with the even converted mana cost. You can't play reanimate. You can't play victimize. You know, there's a lot of these good reanimate spells. So it might be more worth it to run a commander like Meldrotha that makes it so you don't have to use these odd CMC reanimate spells to actually bring the things back from your graveyard. You just cast them.
Yep. This card is really good. And for 6 on a 6/6 that you just know you can use at some point. I mean, this is really good.
Yeah. Run some blink spells.
Granted, it's not any creature that's in the graveyard. It's only from those ones that were milled. I don't think it matters. This is just a really strong card. If this was a 6 CMC spell, I mean, I would put this in a deck too. Even if I didn't want this as a companion, this card's not bad.
It's fantastic.
It's a decent card on its own without the companion mechanic. Yeah.
It is going to be a little bit difficult to do like top of your deck manipulation. Most tutors are 1 CMC. A scroll rack comes to mind of a 2 CMC that you could actually use in this to help you with that mill and reanimation on the ETB trigger. Can't run Sensei's Divining Top, but There are some tools out there to still help you with the top of deck manipulation.
Yep. Great card. I would play this one. Of all of them so far, this one and Gigantha, I guess, are now that we're talking more about these as commanders, I would probably play those two because I have decks that if I looked at my Lazav deck, I bet you my Garuda Doom of Depths would fit reasonably well.
Yeah. No, you're right.
We have one. What?
I say, however, this next one, I'm actually a little bit excited about. So, Umori the Collector is our Golgari companion. So for two, black and a green hybrid, you get a 4/5 ooze.
Ooze.
He's a companion that says each non-land card in your starting deck shares a card type. As Umori the Collector enters the battlefield, you choose a card type. Spells you cast of the chosen type cost one less to cast. So when I was first looking at this card, I immediately thought, okay, we got to look at the hybrid cards. That way we can actually have a little bit of play in what we do. So the obvious answer is artifacts, because you can have artifact creatures and just plain artifacts. But instead, I went, okay, let's see what we can do about enchantments. And there's only one enchantment creature you can play, and that's Farika. And Farika doesn't really care about enchantments. She more cares about snakes. So probably are not going the enchantment route.
Okay.
When it comes to artifacts, you see it opens up a little bit. Reaper King is probably a really good place for Umori. To make all, I mean, you name artifacts when it comes out, all of your scarecrows are going to cost one less. They get pumped by your commander and, you know, enter the battlefield, destroy some stuff. You could do it in a Golos deck if it's like just lands and artifacts and that's all you're going to be doing. But I think the obvious one is just straight creatures. Creatures, nothing but creatures. Play it in whatever creature deck you want to. My first thought was Yarik, because I own a Yarik deck and I know about all those creature ETBs being so good. But yeah, pretty much any.
I like this in Reaper King with just a bunch of scarecrows.
Yeah, it's really good in a Reaper King deck for sure. You run all your rocks, run all your scarecrows.
All your rocks and all your. But the problem is, right? It says each non-land card. So can you run rocks and creatures?
Yeah, because they're both artifacts, they share artifact.
Oh, I guess if they're... You're right. Okay.
So you can't,
are all scarecrows also artifacts?
Yes. However, you cannot run changelings.
Right, because that is a specific type.
Right. So it does hurt Yarik there that you can't run changelings, because fact of the matter is there are not a ton of scarecrows that they printed out there. I think you can still run birthing bows, because that's an artifact that creates changelings.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that going for you.
You can't run the clones. The clones that are becoming are generally an illusion creature type.
Right, right. So
interesting.
It's definitely a restriction. You know, we keep repeating that. I think that's the intent that Wizards had when they printed the cards. But this one actually, I think, would be kind of fun to build around. You could build a really good Yarik deck with this, with just creatures.
You know, the other thing to keep in mind is they specifically said that these were not built with Commander in mind. You know, like this is a specific restriction or exception. I guess it's an exception that the Commander Advisory Group and the Rules Committee made to allow these to work in the format that we play the most.
Mm-hmm.
So these were not even made with Commander in mind.
Right.
I mean, they asked certain. I mean, they said that they were like, we definitely asked. They're like, will these work? Can you do this? But I think it's also important to remember that cards are made not just for our format.
I don't believe it.
No, you don't believe it?
Everything's made for Commander. Come on now.
tell that to Battle of Wits.
Yeah, and Lutri.
and Lutri. Well, Lutri seems like it was really made for our format, but it was also banned in Brawl. So
yeah, it's a little too bonkers.
A little too good in our format. You know, after talking through a lot more of these, I realized that as much as I had a huge disdain for the companion mechanic,
mm-hmm.
It was mostly because the format that I play, I would say 90% of the time, I would go 95% of the time is Commander. And then the rest of the time I'm playing Limited. So for me, getting this in Limited is fine, because you can just throw it in the deck. You can just put it in the 99. I was literally only looking at the companion mechanic from the mechanic itself in the companion zone working for Commander. So that, you know, after stepping out of that box that I put these cards in, they're definitely good. They're not bad.
Right.
But they are difficult to make work with this format. But I obviously, like every other card, they'll get easier to make over time as more cards are printed.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully we see more companion in the future. It's nice to see some of these new mechanics to, you know, pick our brains and actually come up with some creative deck building strategies. And eventually, you know, people will be net decking what we come up with.
Right? Net decking our decks?
I sure hope so. That's the dream right there. When someone says, hey, I net decked your Cranko deck. I'm like, wow, you could do better, but thanks.
So those are the cards that we think work well, or the strategies we think work well with the new Ikoria mechanics. We have one more segment. You want to do Commander of the Week?
Yes. So, Commander.
And this is a big one because it's kind of important this week for you.
I actually, truthfully, don't have this deck put together anymore because I didn't want to play it with my friends. But this is this is the Get Good Frog, aka the Gitrog monster. As we've been playing at home or webcam, all this Commander, we've been playing on this Play EDH Discord. And this Play EDH Discord is set up into four different groups of power. We have Battle Cruiser or Low Power, which is, you know, just get all your stuff out, do whatever you want to do. No one's really trying to stop you. And we'll win, you know, win condition, turn 15, 16, whatever. Who cares? There is Mid Power, where people are, you know, trying to do something about turn 5 and then maybe closing out the game by turn 10. There's High Power, which is decks that may have fallen out of the competitive EDH, maybe toned down decks from competitive EDH lists, decks that have fallen out of favor, that are trying to do something on turn 3, but maybe not winning on turn 3. And then obviously competitive EDH has this unwritten turn 3 rule where people are going to be winning on turn 3 or stopping people from winning on turn 3. This particular deck was built as a high power deck. So it's not 100% CDH Gitrog. This is a 45 land variant of Gitrog. So Gitrog loves lands. So I put them all in. Competitive Gitrog runs probably about 30 to 33 lands, which is still really high for competitive. As a comparison, my Kess deck runs, I think, 26 lands, tons of rocks. 45 lands is obscenely big, but what it's trying to do is, you know, the typical Gitrog thing. When Gitrog is out on the battlefield, so I guess we'll start off with Gitrog. He is a 6/6 Death Touch Frog Horror for 3, a black and a green, that allows you to play an additional land on your turn, but also has the quote unquote drawback of having to destroy a land or sacrifice a land at the beginning of your upkeep. He also says whenever a land goes into your graveyard from anywhere, you draw a card. So the idea is to play a lot of dredge creatures like Golgari Crave Troll, where instead of drawing, you dredge for their dredge amount, Golgari Crave Troll being a 6. So you put 6 cards from the top of your library into your graveyard. More often than not, that in a 45 land deck, this is going to allow you to draw an additional card. So you bring the Golgari Crave back to your hand, draw another card from the Gitrog. If you do dredge more than one land into your graveyard, you still only get one draw trigger. That's important to note for all you Gitrog players out there. And this also plays a lot of discard outlets. Discard outlets like Scourge Familiar is the big one. 4 and a black for a 3/2 flyer imp that says choose and discard a card from your hand, add black to your mana pool. This does go infinite with a land called Dakmor Salvage, which has Dredge 2, allowing you to discard the land. Gitrog draw trigger goes on the stack. Dredge 2, that land back into your hand, and then repeat the process for an infinite amount of black. This deck does not run tutors in order to keep it, again, out of the competitive scene. So you do have to draw into your answers, But it's so easy to draw into your answers that it's still in the high power range. You play a lot of the ramp enablers to play more than one land per turn, like Azusa, Lost But Not Seeking, which allows you to play two additional lands. Just trying to get Gitrog out on turn three or turn four is the goal. Also plays cards that care about discard and cycling, such as Archfiend of Ifnir. Says whenever you discard or cycle a card, you put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponents control. So with that infinite mana, we're going to be winning with a giant Torment of Hailfire, a giant Exsanguinate. We do have some alternate strategies if those don't work. We have some go-wide strategies with Avenger of Zendikar making a lot of Sapperlings, and with all that Enter the Battlefield triggers for your landfall, making the Sapperling or the plants huge. We are doing Titania to make 5/3 elemental. So we have a lot of go-wide strategies in case we can't combo off or in case there is a control player in the pod. But if you are looking to maybe not play competitive but get into some high power, I do play every legal fetch land that you can play in Gitrog, which does bring the price up a little bit. They can easily be swapped out for some Evolving Wilds, Terramorphic Expanse, some of the slow fetches. It brings the power down a little bit, but you're still going to be at a high end when it comes to like mid power. But I highly recommend the deck. Super fun to play, and you can check out the deck list.
And we appreciate that you don't play that with us because it was real good.
Yeah, it's now a Hogak Reanimator deck. Which
That's true, which is also very good. You know, it's so funny, and I think we may have mentioned this before on the podcast, but this was one of those decks that you said, hey, I'm going to come over and I want to play test this. Just know it's a really good deck. Can you play one of your better decks? And I did. And then you proceeded to combat. It wasn't like on turn three. It took a while, but you got there. I remember that. And you're like, oh, this is... Oh yeah. Okay. I see how this comes together.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's fun. The deck is like a puzzle to put all the pieces together and put it in the right order. I'm just, you know, I know I sound like a nerd right now, but we're talking about Magic, so who cares? So, but yeah, putting the puzzle together is a lot of fun for me. It does feel a bit solitary. Sure you know how to win when you are set up to win and don't take 20 minutes to pass the turn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's the end of our episode this week.
Awesome.
We got there. We want to thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at GuardianPod. You can find me at ATFlory.
You can find me at WormcoilEngine.
And take a look for hashtag GuardianProjectPod to find our posts and episodes. You can also email us at GuardianProjectPod@gmail.com. And if you're on Discord and you're interested in joining the discussion, send us a message and we will get you an invite. We'd love to have you. And until next week, you guys have a nice week and enjoy the Ikoria release that comes out tomorrow. And send us all your messages on the decks you're playing and what I should play in Standard.
Send us pictures and screenshots of your most mutated creatures. Like, you know, how many times can you mutate on one creature?
But it doesn't show it. It doesn't show it. It just shows one creature and then just changes all its abilities. How many things you threw onto the creature.
Record a video of you doing it.
Hashtag I mutated. All right. See you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. That's good. And I don't hate Companion. It was a pretty good mechanic.
I
really did not like it, I'll be honest.
I know. When there was only those first few.
Why is this a thing?
And your otter got banned. You're like, nope, I hate Companion now.
It was so sad.